Hey, this is Steve Stimson. You don't know me, but you should. I'm the best-selling author of Blue Fishing. I'm a coach, speaker, and I know a thing or two about networking, relationship building, and making things happen. If you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, create scalable sales systems, and basically getting out of the way of yourself, you should be listening to Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter. You have been warned.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Welcome back to another episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. With me today as my special guest is Steve Sims. So Steve has been called the real-life Wizard of Oz by Forbes and Entrepreneur Magazine. He is a best-selling author with his book, Blue Fishing, The Art of Making Things Happen. He is a sought-after coach and a speaker at a variety of networks, groups, associations, as well as the Pentagon and Harvard twice, he says. He is also about being super, super real, but don't call him authentic, which we'll talk about. Steve, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So real quickly, because I think I wouldn't say it's weird, but at first I was kind of confused by it. And then we had chatted before this. Real life Wizard of Oz, meaning what?
Yeah.
I know people are thinking like they're not going to listen to anything else we say until we clear up this. Like, why would this dude be called that thing?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because if you think of the Wizard of Oz, he was this fake that stood behind a curtain and didn't actually do anything. But for 25 plus years, I was probably the most connected man that no one knew. I was the guy that helped put the first civilian in space, send people down in the Titanic. I've worked with everyone from Elon Musk to Sir Elton John. I was coined as being the Make-A-Wish Foundation for billionaires with really big checkbooks. So Forbes did an article on me a while back on all the amazing, fantastical experiences that I did for my concierge clients. And they went, you're like the real Wizard of Oz. So they ended up calling me the real life Wizard of Oz. So there you go in a nutshell. I'm the guy that basically made billionaires more interesting by putting them into places they never, ever dreamt they could be.
I love it. It's so fun. And I know there's a ton of stories. Obviously, that's one of the values of your book, the Blue Fishing book, to help people see that. Now, where I wanted to chat, obviously, anyone who knows me, the show is called The Authentic Persuasion Show. My book is Selling with Authentic Persuasion. You and I hop on a call to see if this is going to be a good fit, see what kind of fun stuff. And you literally, I'm going to paraphrase, might be the exact quote, you hate the word authenticity. And I'm like, all right, this is going to be fun one way or another. So expand on that. Why did you say that? And where is that coming from?
I hate it because what it's become. I would love it to be used adequately, but it's not being. The bottom line of it is people, every time you turn around and go, look at that guy, he's really authentic, you're really just acknowledging that the rest of the planet is not. And it should be a case of you look at someone as authentic, as, you know, wonderful, as you look at them and go, oh, look at that person, he's breathing. We should be able to look at people as real people, but we don't, because today we put so many layers, so many covers, so many screens on to pretend to be who we are, who we're not, that we lose track of who people really are. That when someone comes along that just goes, wow, they're real, they are who they are, we celebrate them for being authentic. I don't like being called authentic. The word that I prefer is transparent. I am impossible to misunderstand within seconds. And anyone watching this that stayed with us for the 2 minutes of being on, this is as good as I get. This is as deep as I get. This is as attractive as I get. I don't want people spending any of their energy trying to work out, is this guy real? Is he trying to put on some kind of airs and graces to make himself look more articulate? Hell no. So that's why I don't like the way authenticity is being used as a marketing ploy. I actually heard someone go on stage once and then do this mock kind of anger spout at the crowd and then step back and go, I'm sorry for a second. I apologize for being authentic on that. Did he really just call himself authentic? And it just embarrassed me. So I hate the way it's being used as a marketing ploy.
And that totally makes sense. I mean, when you explain it that way, it reminds me a lot of what's happened this year with the pandemic, with sales, and especially I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, and the advice that came around once things shifted and it's virtual and it's drama and there's economic and people losing their jobs and everyone's like, oh, what's the best strategy tactic right now? Be empathetic. Actually care about your people and build some relationships instead of like forcing the sale and focusing only on the sale. And my response to every time I saw this online as well was, that's what you should have been doing the whole time. You should actually care about your prospects.
Yeah. Who needs to be told to give a shit? We're in a world pandemic. We got people falling on their ass. We got people panicking. We're in a world of mass distraction, distortion, and noise and lack of clarity. And it's upsetting us. It's knocking us off our GPS. Who the hell needs to be told to freaking care for once? I find it astonishing.
And why haven't you been caring this whole time, right? Like your authenticity point, which is, okay, so this person's authentic. Why is everyone else not? And why is that? That shouldn't be a big deal, like breathing and caring about people and courtesy and those kind of things. That shouldn't be a big deal. That shouldn't be oddity.
Yep. So I'm glad you get it because I was concerned when I saw the amount of ways that you were using authenticity. I thought, not quite. But when we got the chance to actually chat about it, we actually are both on the same page. We both agree in its word, and we both dislike its abuse.
And it's funny because now I'm thinking, after you just said that point, if you had agreed to come on the show and talk with me because you thought this was just going to be some kind of knockdown battle of you versus authenticity, maybe a little scruff.
I was glad we had the conversation.
Yeah, much more fun to agree. And I think transparency is important. I really like transparency the more I've heard that the last few months from people like yourself and others, which is just being transparent. And I love what you said, which is when you see me, this is what you get. There is nothing else, right? I'm hiding necessarily. I mean, we all have skeletons in our closet maybe that we don't want to talk about as the opening of a conversation. But this is what you get. Like, this is how I am. And I love the use of transparency in that framework.
Yep. Good. So we agree. Thank you.
There we go. So one of the big things that you focus on, which I think goes with the authenticity, the transparency, and what you do, which is really about results and really about helping people, what you shared with me offline, which is impact over flash. You even use the term ugly marketing. Where does that come from? Why do you focus on that?
I think our eyes started to lie to us. I think marketing was getting to a point where you would see a stunning woman walking down the beach and the company would release that advert after she had been Photoshopped. That'd make her legs thinner. That'd make her taller. In real life, if that woman existed, she'd be 7'10" tall. Because quite simply, the way that filters were being brought in, no one would post anything up on social media without making the sky bluer or the water looking clearer. They would filter things. So bottom line of it is, we weren't trusting what we were seeing anymore. Yet when something was rough, maybe a little bit shaky on a video, no filter, it was now relatable. Keeping it as ugly and as raw as it actually is got people to relate to it because they'd be like, oh, yeah, I do that with my videos. Oh, yeah, my sound's a little bit bad in the car. It was relatable. It made impact. It just achieved what it needed to do, which was to get through all of the noise and distrust. So I started to get people, and especially within my coaching program and with my Facebook group, to stop spending so much time on trying to edit perfection. Because as I jokingly say, perfection is a unicorn with three blue testicles. It doesn't exist. So just try and keep it as raw and as real as possible to create the greatest impact.
And what's interesting about that, and I'm thinking of other terms, especially when you're talking about shaky cams. I remember when the movie The Blair Witch Project came out. And
I'm glad you brought that up. Yep, exactly.
Went on for the longest time. And I think people don't think it really happened, but it just had this such a real, I'm going to say it, authentic feel to the way it was done that you wonder, like, did that really happen? Is that really footage from something that occurred? And it was so revolutionary relative to all the highly produced, highly edited, perfect cam type movies out there.
Well, that's also why 9/11 was so impactful to anybody watching it on TV. Now, bearing in mind, we've seen buildings blow up since the 70s and 80s with the invention of CGI. And we look at it and we see these things tip over, we see them explode. But 9/11 was so ugly and raw and real, we could understand it. I've never ever prior to 9/11 seen a building blow up and seen the amount of paper fall out of windows. You just don't think about that kind of stuff. So it was ugly, it was raw, it was real, and more than anything, it was relatable. And I think that's the problem now. We're being lied to so much with advertising, with propaganda, with even the politics that we're living in. Is COVID real? Is it a conspiracy? We are so distrusting of absolutely everything that we latch onto something that is relatable and we can understand and we can go, that's real. We understand that. It's real.
All right. So let's get practical then. What are some basic tips or starting tips for someone to go real with their, we'll call it, ugly marketing?
Well, the first thing is stop selling, start solving. Okay. If at 2 o'clock in the morning, you wake up and you've got a blistering headache. Okay. You go to your bathroom and you grab the headache tablets. Do you give any crap what the actual marketing bottle looks like? Do you care about the packaging of your headache tablet? And the answer is no, you don't. You care that it solves the problem you have. When you start focusing on becoming the solution to somebody else's problem, you remove the necessity for a pretty website, overemphasized text with syllables that no human being would ever say. You don't have to worry about any of that, because you're now the solution of someone else's problem. So the first thing I do with anyone is say, okay, what is the problem that you are a solution to? And then start talking about that problem. And that's how I focus. Do you have one of the best marketing copies out there was tense, nervous headache, take aspirin. That was the best advert ever. Why? Because there's a problem, there's a solution. If you're doing click funnel campaigns, how do you alleviate the person from needing to worry about it? You are now having them outsource the problem to you. I'm removing the problem of follow-ups away from you. If you do gardening, I'm taking the necessity for you to think about your garden and when to water it, when to fertilize it. I'm allowing you to outsource your problem to me. No matter what the products and services that you actually have, focus on the problem that it solves and then speak to that avatar.
The biggest challenge I've seen with individuals, companies, sales teams, businesses from getting to that step and doing that first one that you're talking about is they're usually so in love with their product or service and they think it does everything and they're so attached to the features and benefits that they're putting it in their own terms instead of the other person. And all the other person cares about is themselves.
Yeah, I've often said, stop focusing on your pretty text and get into the conversation your client is having in their head. People don't ask the questions. You've never had a client phone you up and go, hey, I was looking at your website and I don't quite understand what it is you do. Can you tell me, is you don't get that far. A client will look at something and go, hey, I've made the decision. Just imagine if on the front of your website, it says, before you go forward, do you have this problem? We are the solution. Now click to read more. If you make it totally obvious what it is, you see, that's when it comes down to the transparency. We are in a heightened period of distrust, disappointment, distraction, that we want to get to the answer quick. We don't want to have to look to it. We're already aggravated. We can't go out with our friends. We can't drink. We don't know when we're going on a holiday. We're already at a heightened state of aggravation. To be able to get something that's crystal clear, even if it's crystally clear that it's not for you, we're happy with. We want to be able to make decisions. We want to be able to know what we're looking at. Here's a funny little tip that I did when I got to meet all of my celebrity clients, okay? And I guarantee, Justin, you've had this, so you'll understand. And we've all had this maybe on a smaller level than maybe Brad Pitt, but how many people have ever walked up to you and gone, Jason, how you doing? It's Roger. and spoken to you like they're your friend, and you're stood there going, who the hell is this guy? Have you had that before?
Oh, yeah.
Of course you do. Because anyone that's got any kind of profile, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, social, whether it be podcasts, whether it be videos, YouTube, whether being on stage, people come up to you and they go, Steve, how you doing? And you're stood there going, who the fuck's this? Now, the trouble is, while you're thinking, and I'm going to spin it around to how it helps you in a second, but while you're stood there thinking, who the hell's this person? Where do I know them from? You're appearing to be offish. You're appearing to be kind of distant because you're thinking. You're going, yeah. Where do I know this person from? Is he a friend? Is he a pal? Do I owe him money? Do I owe him a contract? Has he ever worked for? You're going through all of these things, and that gets tiring. So what I used to do, and I actually had a friend of mine go, why do you do that? That sounds stupid. But I would always walk up to someone. I'd go, Jason, how you doing? My name is Steve Sims. You don't know me, but I love your podcast.
Yeah.
Now, just by adding that you don't know me or we've never met, suddenly allows you to relax because you can now go, oh, I don't know this guy, but he's heard about, how are you, Steve? And you get to start the conversation. Now, that's what you've got to do with your clients. You've got to realize that they don't know what you do. They don't know what you get up to. And you spend way too much time, 9 times out of 10, outsourcing your problem to a copywriter who's written text for your website that you never in a million years would actually repeat in a bar. But you've got to speak as though you've just bumped into someone in a coffee shop. You've overheard a conversation they've had. And you've got to be able to turn around and go, hey, I hear you have a problem with your web design. I don't understand why you have that problem, because if you follow these 3 steps, you can get over that. In fact, that's what I do. Get into a coffee shop conversation and stop trying to appear or trying to be smarter than what you are and stop focusing on you. Focus the problem the client has and why you're the solution to it.
I love all of that, which I use all the time. We've never met, or just calling it like it is. Hey, this is a cold call, or you weren't expecting this call. It's like, takes all that pressure off, calls it what it is. Yeah. Again, like you said, there's a level of distrust. There's a level of distraction. So everyone's in a hurry. Everyone wants what they want now. There's too much going on. So how do you choose? And then you just don't trust anybody because they're probably lying to you anyway, if they're a business or a company. And so there's this terrible mashup. But calling it like it is and just doing the opposite of what anyone else would do will usually break that ice. And then I think what's so great is then continuing
Jason,
that conversation.
I'm going to stop you there for a second.
Do it.
Anyone that's listening to that podcast, just listen to what Jason said again. He was so accurate. We're at a heightened level of distrust just by calling it, the saying, hey, wasn't expecting this call. Hey, this is an advert. I want to talk to you about a product I've got that I feel that can help you. It's $2,000, but I think it can help you. Just by being crystal clear right up front, you have no idea how today people will be thrilled with just being that open to someone. So, Jason, you nailed it. Congratulations.
Awesome. Appreciate that. And I've seen that work for so many clients. Everyone asks, like, what should I say on this cold call? What should I do in this email? Just call it like it is and do that. You're talking about what you would say, and then you're starting off these conversations, these relationships, solving these problems for somebody. And I think where companies aren't doing it as well is they're trying to appeal to everybody instead of having a clear line in the sand of here's who I help and here's who I don't help. Like you said, back to the transparency, the Steve Sims that I have come to know in our couple of conversations, you're going to appeal to some people and then you're really not going to appeal to some other people. And that's okay, because your goal isn't to own the world and have everyone in your tribe. It's for you to have your tribe, right? And so companies fail at that because their website is trying to appeal to everybody instead of drawing that line in the sand.
When you try to catch all, you catch nothing. And there's nothing worse than catching the client that you don't actually connect with. And I'm sure people out there are going, oh, I know about this. We've all had those clients where we don't really get on with. And they're a pain in the ass. And I've always said, if you take on a client that's an asshole, they're not going to get better by age. So we've all had those clients that we go, yeah, well, what I'm trying, no, I hear what you're saying, but what, yeah, we would. and you chase the checkbook and not the client. And then you get tired. And then the next phone call you have is with a client that you do get on with, but you're already tired and bitchy and pissed off from the call you just had. Now you bring that attitude, even though you think you're hiding it, you bring that attitude and lack of tolerance over to someone that doesn't disturb it. How many times have you had a bad phone call with you and then you put the phone down? The next person that phones you up is your wife, your boyfriend, your best mate. And you pick up the phone and you go, yeah, what is it? And your mate turns around and goes, well, hang on, don't give me that attitude. If you're having a bad day, go away. You know, kick the dog, whatever, but not me. And you just go, hey, I'm sorry. The bottom line of it is you do not have room to try and catch people that you can't relate to. Because the first thing that happens is you have to start spending your effort, your energy on trying to be someone that you're not to look after a client that you never should have had in the first place. The beauty about me, if I can use me and beauty in the same sentence, is that, as you said quite rightly, Jason, people are either in Camp Steve, will wear the t-shirt, get the tattoo, get the eye piercing, or they want to be nowhere the hell near me. But what I don't have is fence sitters. I don't have people sitting there going, I'm not sure what this guy's about. They know exactly what I'm about, and it filters. And when you consider the amount of billions of people in the world, and you only need a percent of a percent to be buying your house in Malibu, you really shouldn't be just trying to catch people that you can't relate to. Because when you've got those people in your company, it causes a change in you. And that actually starts a cancer within your company, which, if not cut out, will destroy your company. So focus on the client, not the checkbook, and never spend any of your energy. We've got these things called, you know, telephones. And every day, what do? We charge them up. And when we're working on stuff, and the battery's getting low, we stop wasting what we're doing on it, so we're only using the phone for what it's best used for. Don't waste any of your energy on being somebody that you're not.
And don't waste your time on your phone using up your battery if you know you've got only a finite amount until you're going to charge it again, which, if we look at people in their business or in their sales career, whatever, is they start off the day with a full tank, and they think, okay, I'm going to tackle the world. And then next thing you know, by the end of the day, they've used it up all in the wrong resources.
You perfectly said again. You should do a podcast, Jason. You're brilliant.
That sounds good to you. I think I will. So there's what you are successful at doing, and then there's now what you're helping people with. And wherever you want to go with this, you can. Obviously, where you made your name is in building relationships and then aligning people with what they want as their goal, right? As your real life Wizard of Oz story says, and your professional high profile concierge type service. How were you successful at networking to that level? And or, because most people aren't going to be playing in that game that you're talking about listening to this podcast, what tips do you give to people based on what you found for networking, building relationships, building referrals, and growing that type of business pipeline, if you will?
So I created the world's leading concierge firm to billionaires purely and simply because I wanted to get into a room and find out how they thought, how they talked, what they did differently, because I wanted to be very, very wealthy. And I looked at the bars I was kicking around in East London and found out I was in biker bars because I'm a biker, but I was hanging around with a bunch of broke-ass bikers. So I was in the wrong room. So I wanted to get into an affluent room. That's what I first started doing. That's the only reason I launched the concierge firm. And then about 3 years ago, when we released a book, we released a book because I was in awe of how people work to their limitations, and they create their own limitations. You made a statement, Jason, that they probably don't work in the same level I do. I got kicked out of school at 15 years old. I was working on the building site, became a bricklayer, and now can quote Sir Elton John and Elon Musk as clients. So if I did it from being a bricklayer and a bouncer, you're already out of excuses. But the trouble is, here's the downside. Most people in business, they market to clients that may be able to afford them. The amount of clients that I know that have built a product, it looks great. And then the next thing they do is they focus on the payment structure so that you can crack it down into installments. Why don't you market to people where payment is not a question? You know, if you're selling something for $10,000, don't go down your local fish market and see about selling it down there. Go up to your local Ferrari store and see if you can sell it there. Why do people not market into sand pits where it's no longer a concern? I think the reason I was so easy to communicate with really affluent people was, one, very, very primitive and basic. I want to be able to do something for $50,000. I want to get paid $50,000. So where should I go and market to? That was my first question. And then secondly, what do they need that they would pay $50,000 to? And I also, whenever I would go up to a billionaire, now bearing in mind, haven't owned a car for years, I always turn up with a crash helmet in my hand. And I would always turn up and go, hey, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much for having this meeting. Now, what's your problem? I would straight away throw, I wouldn't sales pitch me. I wouldn't go, well, you know, I've done this with the Pope and I've done this with Richard Branson. And I've done this with the rock band Aerosmith and Journey. And I'm a big, never did any of that. I would sit down straight away and go, hey, glad we got the time to chat. But what's your problem? Why am I here? Because the only reason you're there is always to solve someone else's problem. So get that conversation going first. But that's the thing I always noticed. I have a little jokey statement, go for stupid, okay? Go for what people are going to laugh at. If you sit there and go, I'm going to do business with Elon Musk, someone in your coffee shop is going to laugh at you. Use that as fuel. Go for stupid. Most people laugh and jeer at you, not because of what you're going for, but because of the fear that if you get it, it'll show how inadequate they are. That's why they don't do it. So start changing your parameters. Start lifting your goals. And if you want to work with the Queen of England, go for the Queen of England. If you want to do it, I know you're sitting there going, oh, that sounds easy for you. Shut up. Bricklayer Dorman is exactly what I did. Start conversations with people that can get you on the ladder to the people you want to work with. And you start those conversations by going, what is your problem and how can I help you?
And no matter what you're selling, if you start with that, then be successful, because that's the value, right? Like, everyone has something. And I love what you said, which is, if we're talking, we're in this meeting, there's a reason you said yes. Now, it takes some effort to get to that meeting to where you can sit there or be on the phone and say that, right? Which is where the marketing, which is where the website, the social media, yeah, the ugly marketing, all those things kind of fit in, the relationship building, the phone calls, the networking, your way to it, and then to get to that point.
But who cares? Have you ever trapped your finger in a door?
Yes.
Right. Okay. You ever hit your finger with a hammer?
Yes.
Right. Have you ever walked into something and banged your head?
Yes.
Right. Do all those three things hurt?
Yes.
Can you remember the actual pain, the sensation of pain for any one of those?
Yes.
You can?
I think so. Uh-oh. Is that the wrong answer?
Think about it. You know it hurt. Yeah. You know you don't want to do it. You know you're scared to trap your fingers again. Yeah. But the bottom line of it is, our brain is taught to not retain the full emotion that was created during that painful moment. If we could actually hold on to how painful things were, do you think women would ever have a second child?
No.
Okay. We know it hurts. Like, I've got tattoos on me and piercings. First ever tattoo I had on my arm, I passed out. Okay. Because the pain as me as a young lad was freaking excruciating. I was like, I hate this. Passed out. Okay. 6 months later, I'm going to get one on the other arm. I went and got another. Guess what I did? I went to the same place and I passed out again. We don't hold on to the actual, we know it doesn't hurt. Our mind goes, don't do that because it hurts. Don't touch that pot because it hurts. But the bottom line of it is, we let go. That we also take that into business. It's going to take you 4 gazillion attempts to get into that room. But you've only got to get into that room once. And then the next room you get into, you'll be able to use that room as a reference point and a testimonial to get you into more rooms. In the early stages of my business, and I've worked with everyone from the Grammys, the New York Fashion Week, Monaco Grand Prix, Formula One, I couldn't even get a job to host your bloody kid's birthday party. But I kept on trying. And then the next one would get up. And then the next one would get up. You climb up that ladder. There's an old saying that no one's ever walked onto a rooftop. You get there by climbing up a ladder. But every time you take a new run, okay, all of the calls that you didn't get, all the times people said no to you, all the times that people said you're too expensive, you can't do it, you have no proof, they all go by the wayside because you're now there. Give you one prime example that's very current now. Elon Musk, who got ridiculed by NASA, is now in partnership with them, okay? Has just launched a rocket up into space. Now, you may recall, I don't know how much you watch the rockets, but do you remember when Elon Musk was trying to regain the fuel cell? Mm-hmm. Because the fuel cell is the largest part of the rocket. And if you can save that, you save about 30% because it's a reusable fuel cell. So do you remember how we would see every single week a fuel cell land on that floating platform in the ocean? And what would happen to it?
There was a bunch that failed, and then it started getting better.
Right. So there was a bunch that failed, and they would fall over, and they would explode. And then there were a bunch that would land a little bit, teeter a little bit, fall over, and then explode. And then one day it didn't explode. Yep. One day it landed. Okay. When was the last time you saw that fuel cell land on the platform?
I haven't really seen it since then.
Why? Because it works. The bottom line of it is we only remember things when they go wrong, but it's only got to go right once. And then all of a sudden it's gone away. Now he's sending people up in there. He's sending satellites up there. It's no longer news because he's raised his ability, his limitations, what he can achieve. He constantly goes for the ridiculous, the sublime, the stupid. And then because he keeps going for it, occasionally starts achieving it, which now creates his new benchmark and level of achievement.
I love it. And for people out there, what's the biggest takeaway from that whole thing that somebody should do right now?
Stop listening to other people. Okay. The bottom line of it is your fears, your parameters, your glass ceilings, they've been imposed by yourself. You just imagine, it's a horrible saying, but it's so good. And I've got two, and the last one will scare the shit out of you. But just imagine if you could do something today and not fail, what would you do? Now, that's a beautiful saying. It gets, I could do anything. 9 times out of 10, people won't answer that question because it's too surreal. But someone said something to me years ago that stuck with me and propelled me through my darkest hours. Those moments when I need to get some more clients going in, or I need to focus on getting more business in, or I've overextended or whatever, or I've accepted a challenge and I'm thinking, my God, how am I going to pull this off? Someone once said to me, the definition of hell is to meet the man that you could have been. When he said that to me, scared the shit out of me. So hell, the definition is to meet the man or woman that you could have been if you'd have taken that chance, if you'd have gone for stupid, if you'd have not listened to your mates in the pub. So that is what I want you to do. I want you to suddenly start tearing down your own barriers and going, hang on a minute, what can I achieve? And can I give you a couple of examples?
Let's go.
All right. You've got to create habits on how to push yourself. The couple of habits I do is I always order something differently off of an appetizer menu. Now, it's stupid, but I do this with my kids. I will go into a restaurant, and this is what I call low liability stretch. You go into a restaurant, and like sushi, perfect example. You know the things you like in there, but you haven't heard of half the rest of it because you don't speak Japanese. So what do? You go in there, and you end up usually getting the same appetizers. Pick an appetizer that you have no idea what it is, absolutely cannot understand what it is, and risk that $5. Now, you may be educated after eating it that it is the most disgusting thing you've ever put in your mouth, or you've now discovered a new favorite. Okay? You're teaching your brain, I'm going to try things that I don't normally try. Another classic one is I have a radio station that I always carry with me on my iPhone and on my computer called My Tuner. And it allows me to listen to radio stations from all over the world. Every now and then, when I'm in a bit of a lull, I will just scramble and just auto select to shuffle and listen to a radio station from another part of the world for about an hour. And I listened the other week to a Norwegian EDM music, and it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon here, in Los Angeles. So it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. So they're all probably stoned out of their head listening to this. It was the biggest pile of crap I've ever heard in my life. But because I listened to it, I now know what Norwegian EDM, electronic dance music, is. I now know that I don't like it because I listened to it for an hour. I train myself to try different things. And now when I go out with my kids, they're like, oh, can we pick the appetite? Oh, can we try something? And sometimes just driving home, we'll go, we haven't been down this road before. Sometimes it'll be a dead end. Sometimes it'll show us an amazing view of the hills and landscape. So just try little things now that you've never done before. Start trying to play an instrument. Watch a program with subtitles, okay? You never would have thought. Just get your brain going, hey, we're doing things differently now, buddy. Get used to it, because you'll be amazed that when you go into business, how your brain is actually stretched to accept difference. And quite simply, and here's one quote that I love and I live by, it will teach you to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
And also segues into the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, right? So you're talking about changing what you're doing, micro, macro, doesn't matter, but building up that habit of doing things different if you'd like some type of different experience in life. Maybe not somebody else's life, but just a different experience and different journey.
Yeah, and 100%, you're very accurate.
I love it. I think that's great. And I've heard that before about ordering, even if you go out with somebody and you're going to dinner, order a third entree that you share, $15-$20, maybe you're out, you try something new, it works, it doesn't work. The cost versus the experience and the new thing, maybe it's something you never would have thought of and either love it, like you said, or it turns out to be terrible and now you know.
Some of the funniest memories I've got of with my kids, and we get to travel a lot, is going to restaurants all over the planet and trying something. And the meals that I can really remember with a great fat smile is when we've ordered something on the appetizer that has just been hellishly disgusting or scary. And it's just started the meal with a smile because we're like, what the hell is this? And it turns up and we're like, oh my God, do we run from it? Do we attack it? Do we eat it? Do we beg for its forgiveness? It's been weird. And anyone listening in Japan, I've tried a few. There's been some weird stuff that's ended up on my plates there. But those have been really good because they've just made you grow.
And if we correlate that or bring that back to business, back to sales, specifically for this show, for this podcast, sales, and we tie that into what we talked about now, feels like a while ago, is to do things the opposite of what everyone else is doing. So you take that kind of behavior into your conversations, into your marketing, into your outreach, into your emails, into your LinkedIn. And instead of doing what you think you're supposed to do or what the normal is or whatever your habit is, which is I always order this at the restaurant and then I do this and then I get this to drink and I tip this, instead do something completely different and then take that pattern interrupt. You'll get probably amazingly different results because your prospects are also desensitized to the same old crap and they tune that out and you're going to give them something different as well.
Yeah, spot on again, Jason. People are just tired of repetition. And let's be blunt, what worked last year and the year before and the year before, we're on a different playing field now. People want different things. People are in a different mode. And understand, your message is irrelevant when it comes out of your mouth. It's only relevant to whoever's listening to it and how it's been received. So whatever you say is important only to the recipient. Try something different. Be something different. Be the change you want to see. If you've got a statement, make the statement. Some people will be alienated and run away from you. Good. Because they were never your people to start with. But if you can get your followers from 2,000 down to 2, but those 2 start working with you, now you've got a business.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so important as far as who your tribe is, who you are focused on, who wants to follow you into battle on your mission or whatever it is that you're doing and solving. I think that's key. So shifting a little bit, we obviously touched on authenticity in the beginning and your thoughts on it, which is awesome. What do you think of when you hear the word persuasion, and or where do you see that fitting into, let's say, even your success?
Persuasion has a negative connotation that it is installing your order or requirement onto somebody else. But I don't like to persuade people. I like to passionately care about the situation. And there's a difference. If I'm trying to sell you a set of books and you already own the books, and I'm using all of my skills of persuasion to get you to buy a set that are not tattered or are fresh paper or have a new cover, but it's the same book, then that's getting salesy. And that world has gone. It's died, okay? But if you need something, and I am toe-to-toe arguing with passion that, hey, you've got this I can get rid of this problem. Help me help you. Be open-minded for 3 seconds to let me show you what it will do. Now, that may sound very forcible, and it will alienate and piss a lot of people off, but there's a big difference when you look at passionately solving something or looking to solve something, and you're coming at it from a very passionate standpoint and the power of persuasion.
And I think that's great, and I couldn't agree more, and I think there's people who put different terms, put persuasion in the manipulation. They like convince instead, but I like the intent and how you describe that, right? Selling something to somebody they don't need just for the sake of your own benefit, that's not really going to improve, versus, which I agree with, which is when you know that you can help somebody, they have a problem, you can solve it, taking it as it's your duty and responsibility to do it, and the pressure, if you will, coming from that place, which is, I know where we should go, and I want you to get there, and I want to help you get there for your benefit.
Absolutely. Focus on them. Focus on that problem. And that's where the referrals, the testimonials, your benchmark. When you've got a client that you've done a job for and they are thrilled and they're happy and they no longer have the problem, how much do you think they're going to recommend you to other people that have got the same problem? Okay, so that's where business really goes around. Most of my websites have never had a phone number or a way of contacting me because I literally have grown by solving someone's problem, then going, hey, did it work? Absolutely, Steve, you were brilliant. Good. I'd have 5 people that should know that. And that's what I've asked. I'd have 5 people that should know that. Yeah, I know 2 or 3. Great. Let them know. And that's how I've grown my business.
I love it. So if we're talking about like a single trade, obviously we've talked about a lot in this 44 minutes to get to this point, but a single trait, mindset, personality of someone who's successful in sales or persuasion, what would you narrow that down to?
Ignorance. It was my wife that actually came up with that. The beauty about ignorance is it can allow you to just continue with passion to solve the problem without fear of rejection, without contemplating the no, without analyzing or even recognizing any objective. If you are so ignorant that you can't fail on solving this person's problem, you go in like a steam train with passion to help them. You are fully focused on them, and they love that. And so I would say that whenever I look at the people laugh at them, they don't care. They fail. They've just become educated on what didn't work. There's a level of ignorance in all the successful people that I know and I've worked with.
I love it. And anyone watching the video can just see me laughing and smiling at that. Because one of the things, and I try not to be too smart, that's usually when I get into trouble. But one thing I found really successful for myself in selling conversations and sales roles and then helping salespeople is to just go into those conversations completely ignorant. I know what I know, but who cares what I know? It doesn't matter. And I even just basically act like I just don't know anything. I almost like Columbo. I sell like Columbo, which is like, how is this guy even in business? Like, how is he wanting to help me in any way? But it's coming from this ignorant, caring, I want to help you. If I knew the answers, I would just tell you, but I don't. And so I want to find out what your problem is, and then I'll tell you what the answer is. And I found that works really, really well.
Yep. No, you're spot on.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
Rich.
That's it.
There's 2 parts. What did I want to be when I grew up? Rich. What did I really want to be once I started getting rich? Wealthy. And I noticed that there are 2 different things. And one of them I actually already had. You see, I grew up with very little money in East London in a tiny little 2-bedroom house with my family, and I thought we were broke. But what I didn't realize was I was always loved. I was always cared for. I was always warm. I was never not loved, tucked in, secure, safe, always fed. I never had any problems as a child outside of not being able to afford the cool sneakers or a couple more beers in a pub. I thought I was poor until I realized how wealthy and a loving family I actually was. And also the lessons I was being given were just there that would power me and empower me in the future. But I wanted to be rich. And I always used to ride motorcycles. I wanted to buy Ferraris. I wanted to live in penthouses. I'd never even been in one, but I wanted to live in one. And so I wanted to get in front of people that were rich to find out, how do you do things? Why do you do things? Why are you different to me? That's what I wanted. As I grew, I suddenly noticed I wanted wealth. I wanted people to be able to go, that's Steve Sims. He does this. And he's a funny cat, but he's a good lad. I wanted that kind of wealth. I wanted to know that my kids would never have to worry about being loved, cared for, warmed, and cherished. I wanted to make sure that my friends always knew that if shit went down, I had their back. I wanted people to know that if they had an issue, they could contact me and I would help. I wanted that, and I realized that was where the wealth is. And the wealth was also there by removing all of the trinkets that we call success, like a fancy watch or a fancy car or the three-piece suit, which are all really nice. I've got a nice watch and I've got some nice suits, but it isn't me. I wear them. They don't wear me. And that was the big thing. So I think as a young lad, I wanted to not care. And I remember being in a pub. I could afford two beers, but the third beer was always a case of everyone throws their money in the table and gets divided, and we buy another couple of beers, and then we would literally just share them around each other's pint mug just to get. And I always thought to myself, I don't want to ever worry about it. And I remember being a doorman once and seeing this guy put his credit card down on the tab to pay for the tab for the drinks him and his mates and the girls have been drinking. And he never checked what the tab was. And I remember, because let's be blunt, in nightclubs, they had a couple of extra drinks. It's a ripoff, but that's what they do. You get drunk, you forget how many drinks you had. So they always add a couple more on, and then there's a tip for the girls. But I remember this guy was so wealthy, so rich, that he dropped his credit card down on that tab. Whatever the charge was, he knew it could cover it. And that's the person I wanted to be. I wanted to be that successful. And I remember at the time, my credit card, well, it wasn't even a credit card, it was a charge card. I knew to the cent how much money I had on that thing.
Yeah.
And was terrified it would go, beep, beep, sorry, sir, your card's been denied. There was nothing worse. I never wanted to have a credit card be denied.
Makes sense. And then this might be in the same tone, but if you narrowed it down, what is your definition of success?
Being comfortable to stand up as you are. I would say that was it. I would say that my biggest asset, my biggest attribute, my biggest success is being able to stand up and go, hey, my name's Steve Sims. This is it. And being that confident now that I have achieved things that I can rule with that confidence, and being strong enough to be able to help other people. There's an old saying, you can't help someone up with a broken hand. You've got to make sure that you're strong, you're committed, you're powerful, you're successful before you can impart it on other people. That's why I find it really funny today in Instagram with all these Insta gurus telling you how to make $1 million and afford this Lamborghini that they're leaning up against that they don't bloody own when they've never freaking done anything. Yeah. That makes me giggle. Wow. And it makes me scared as well a bit, but predominantly giggle.
Yeah. I mean, the giggle is that you're aware of it. The scary is that a lot of people aren't. A lot of people don't realize how fake and phony that is. And they're taking advice from someone who's never done it.
Yeah, I've spoken on many stages all over the planet. And I've spoken on stages with pricks that basically have made their money by selling somebody else's course wrapped up with their name on it. And they're up there talking about digital marketing. And what they're doing is just preying on people's greed and stupidity. And there are greedy, stupid people out there that will always pay for stuff. And I don't find that the kind of integrity that I want to have. I believe wealth is credibility and integrity.
I couldn't agree with you more on all of that. Last question, journey or the destination?
Oh, journey. I don't think I've ever arrived at my destination. I've always kind of like changed it along the way. Or you've got there and go, well, this is good, but let's get traveling again.
I could just see you in that mode on your bike on a long road trip, just going wherever. Just going after one thing or another.
Yeah, it happened.
Yeah. I love it. Steve, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for sharing all this. Truly fantastic. So much good business and life advice. For anyone listening, your biggest thing right now that you're focused on is a Facebook group. So I have it up there. It's Facebook.com/group/Steve D. Sims. I'm sure if they just search Steve Sims, Real Life Wizard of Oz, they'll find you. Talk about what's in that group. What is it that you want people to come there for?
Well, it's a free Facebook group, so there's no charging or pitching or poaching. So it's an Entrepreneur's Advantage with Steve Sims. If you go on a Facebook and just search that, an Entrepreneur's Advantage, it'll pop up. In there, I post on software that I've been trying. If it fails, I tell you. If it's highly successful, I tell you. I post little videos. I do loads of live videos in there. We have a really cool thing called the Breakfast Club, where every month we basically just reveal 4 random members of that community just to focus on who they are, what they do, and what problem do they solve. Because I'm a great believer that the problem you have may be solved by the person you're sitting next to, as long as you're in the right room. And I wanted to create this as a safe place of creative disruptors that we got educated through failings, and we help other people avoid that. So an Entrepreneur's Advantage is where I want people to become more impactful and profitable.
I love it. Steve, thanks again for coming on the show and sharing so much awesomeness from behind the curtain.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do 2 things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.